It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast, episode 349, and I am your host, Adam Mangum. We didn't want to, but we spent a lot of this show breaking down what went wrong against Utah. We talk about conservative coaching decisions, injuries, and what changes might come as a result of this crushing loss. Also on the show, women's volleyball is a top seed, and men's basketball drops an early season non-conference test. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Follow us on Facebook at Facebook.com/Rise and Shout, and listen to us right now. So, Matt, you know how you have this tofu beef thing with Andre?
It's just a tofu.
It's a tofu beef? It's not a tofu beef. It's just a tofu instead of a beef.
Yeah, you can't have tofu beef because it's like... Sure, beef is beef and tofu is tofu.
You could put beef and tofu together. You'd have tofu beef.
It kind of defeats the purpose of the tofu, doesn't it?
I don't know. It absorbs the flavor of whatever it has.
Flavored. I think there's beef-flavored tofu.
Yeah, that sounds gross. I have a tofu with you, then.
Oh, please do tell.
Why didn't you tell me to watch Stranger Things sooner?
I think I did tell you to watch Stranger Things sooner.
I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure we've talked about this.
I am 6 episodes into season 1. I just watched 2 episodes on the plane. And I kind of wanted to call you and tell you I was sick and I couldn't do the podcast so I could finish the last 2 episodes tonight.
So I finished the very last episode on a plane. And while I was watching it, you can feel somebody over your shoulder or whatever. And I turn around, and there's a woman sitting across the aisle in one room behind me whose eyes are just glued on my screen. And I look over, I look back at her, and then she looks up at me and has this like kind of embarrassed look on her face. And then I was like, now this is an awesome show. I totally understand why she's doing this. So I turn the computer a little bit so that she's got a clearer shot. And I said, I'm sorry, I don't have headphones or anything for you. She's like, I've seen this episode 100 times. I already know everything that they're saying. If I just watch it, that's fine.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. It's a great show.
It's amazing. These first 6 episodes are amazing. I thought it was going to be over the top 80s nostalgia.
Yeah.
And it is not. It's a show set in the 80s, but it's not like over the top 80s nostalgia.
No, it's not an 80s. It's not about the 80s.
No.
They're just using – that's just the backdrop for the story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it works
because –
But
they do a really good job with it.
Yeah, yeah. They do a really – and the acting is amazing. Now I understand why the kids – everyone was so, geeked out about how good the kids were. So, anyway, if you haven't seen – and I know the reason I brought up the tofu thing is Andre Hutchins on Twitter, he's quite a Stranger Things fan. So – there you go, Andre. Little shout out about Stranger Things. Not that they need publicity from us. Stranger Things probably does not need publicity from us.
No, this will not. They're not going to know the difference that we ever talked about this.
It will not be a significant uptick in the Netflix ratings. I think you are correct. So, Matt, this past weekend was not a great weekend for BYU sports. I'll be honest. It was kind of a crappy weekend for BYU sports.
Yeah.
So we'll start off with women's volleyball. So women's volleyball dropped their last regular season game against Loyola Marymount, their first loss of the season. And luckily for them, though, they still were able to get a top 4 seed in the NCAA tournament. And why is that important, Matt? Do you know why that's important?
Because you get to host, baby.
You get to host. So they get the number 4 seed in the 2018 NCAA Division I Volleyball Championships and will host the first and second rounds of the tournament on Friday. So they face Friday night. They face Stony Brook out of the America East Conference and the champions of that. And then on Saturday, they will face the winner of Utah and Denver. I feel like the committee kind of messed this up, right? You can't put Utah and BYU in the same bracket.
No, but that's exactly why they did it. They wanted to make sure they played and played in Provo or Salt Lake.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it'll be in Provo no matter what.
Right.
And then they get to, They get to turn around, and if they win these two, they will get to host the next weekend as well.
And there's some interesting matchups that would be coming out of that too. I mean, if you look at the brackets, and I will fully admit that I'm not a women's volleyball expert. I like their bracket.
You like their bracket? I was thinking it looked kind of tough. Looks tough, but that's all right. That's all right. In the end,
see, but I'm probably a little bit Big Ten biased.
Because you're just a Big Ten homer.
Because I am totally a Big Ten homer, but I also know Big Ten volleyball than some of the other conferences because I get alerts about those teams as well, right? So when I see that Wisconsin, Penn State, and Illinois are all not in that bracket, right? Then I'm like, okay, all right. But I do understand that Texas is no like cakewalk, right? I get that. You know, and Michigan like is not one of the top teams out of the Big Ten, but anyway. I think I like their bracket. I don't. Maybe it's fine. I just don't know.
It's fine. Again, I'm not an expert either. If they make it to the Final Four, Matt, do you know where the Final Four is hosted this year?
I do know where the Final Four is hosted this year. Would you?
Oh,
you would get to go.
I could go to that. Yes. So the Final Four is in Minneapolis at the Target Center, but let's not get ahead of ourselves here. Right, let's not get ahead of ourselves. They gotta win a couple matches this weekend and win a couple matches in the regionals as well. So we'll see how that goes.
So are you? I wanted to ask you this. I think I know the answer, but are you one of those guys who's like, hey, it's good that they dropped one in the regular season because then you kind of get that out of your system before the tournament, or do you feel like that doesn't matter and you just run the table and go into the tournament undefeated?
I think there is an element, like, you know, when Saban's halftime interview during Citadel, he almost seemed like happy, which for Saban means he just wasn't super angry.
He didn't yell at the person interviewing.
I think it's good for a team that's on a roll to struggle before they get to where things matter more, right? Does that make sense? I don't think they needed to lose to learn that lesson. So, no, I'm not one of those people. I don't think the Patriots ended up not going undefeated because they didn't lose a game earlier, right? Like, it's kind of stupid when you think about it, right? I don't think Alabama would have been better off if they dropped that game against Auburn, right? Saturday. I think they're better off by winning it and then beating Georgia in the SEC championship, right? But you know what the storyline will be if Alabama loses, right? The storyline will be, well, they hadn't struggled all year. They hadn't been in a close game all the year, so they don't know how to win close games.
So they finally face some adversity or whatever, right?
It's stupid. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Most of these guys, all of the women on this BYU volleyball team have played in meaningful matches in their life, right? Meaningful matches.
And this is all of these matches are important to them. They wanted to go undefeated more than any of us wanted them to go undefeated.
Right. And Loyola Marymount's not a terrible team. They made the tournament, right? It's a big disappointment for them, I'm sure. But in the end, if they make the Final Four and then they make it to Minneapolis, that'll be all forgotten, right? If they end up losing in the first couple rounds, then I think, unfortunately, the narrative of this season will be that they peaked early and they, you know, played a fairly weak schedule towards the end of their conference isn't as good, and that'll be the narrative. But there's an easy way to not have that narrative. Go win. Which I think
they will. Just go win the games. Yeah, but I think the conference schedule being weak, I don't know. I mean, how many teams did the conference put into the tournament?
Three? Four?
I thought it was five.
Is it five? I can't remember.
So you got Loyola Marymount. You got St. Mary's. You got BYU. So there's three.
I thought it was three or four.
Pepperdine. San Diego.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
Yeah. So there's five.
You're right.
Right. So I mean, I don't know. I agree with you that people are going to say that, and those aren't, and none of those teams were seeded, right? They don't seed all of the teams in the tournament.
Right.
So you know, there's something to be said around that. But anyway, I'm excited to see how this team does. It's fun when the teams, when any of our teams are good. But
yeah, and I think they'll do well. I think they'll. There's a good shot they don't drop a set this weekend, right? At home, against Stony Brook and whoever wins that that other match. So we'll see. Matt, this weekend in the NFL, I didn't put this in the agenda, but Taysom continues to do Taysom things. I saw his kickoff return in that Saints game. Fred Warner, Kyle Van Noy. We've got a bunch of guys, Michael Davis starting for the Chargers. Bunch of folks doing things, former Cougars and the pros for the NFL. So a good weekend for Cougars and the pros. Nothing spectacular. And I guess Ziggy then set a record that's not a record, most sacks on Thanksgiving Day. I don't even know what that means, but because...
Yeah, it's like being the second-best ballerina in Galveston, Texas.
Well, I mean, the Lions play, the Lions and Cowboys, it's going to be one of those teams' guy, right? I mean, nobody else plays enough on Thanksgiving to set a record. But still, I mean, he had
He had a game.
He made a sack, so that's good. So let's get back on our agenda, Matt, and... I didn't even do the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News. That was CougarFan.com Cougars in the News. We just did.
Cougars in the News!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Is that the first time I've missed that?
I don't know, but see, anybody who's listening to the podcast on an accelerated speed because they want to like skip all of the baloney at the front, and then when I say Cougars at the News in the News, that's when they turn it back on. They're going to be all confused now
because
they're
going to
have stopped it. I don't know.
There's no baloney in this podcast. This is a baloney-free podcast.
I mean, the tomfoolery or the shenanigans. But there weren't any shenanigans at the beginning of this show. We jumped right into women's volleyball.
Well, we did talk about Stranger Things.
That's not shenanigans. That's just good television.
That's what I'm saying. We don't do shenanigans. We don't do tomfoolery.
Tomfoolery.
Everything we talk about is super important.
Super serious.
Okay, I'm stalling. I don't want to talk about this Utah game.
I would much rather talk about the women's volleyball team than the BYU-Utah football game.
Saturday night, how long did it take you to fall asleep?
I'm not even sure. I don't even know that I've slept yet.
It took me a long time.
Sat in silence. A long time.
Yeah, yeah. So you were watching it with your son, right? You let him stay up?
Yeah, yeah.
So he got to his first big, huge gut punch loss.
I think it's an important lesson for any young man to learn. But he's like the size of a full grown human now. So I mean, I've got to let him stay up.
yeah, it's true. So Chase Blyle sent us an email, and I think he's trolling us, Matt. But you be the judge. He says, "What a game Saturday, huh? I had to get on a red eye at halftime, but we were up 20. How many did we end up putting on them by the end of the game? So happy to see us finally be able to dominate an opponent, especially Utah. Go Cougs." I think that's a trolling email, man, because he didn't send it like as he's getting on the plane. The timestamp was not correct for that. So I think Chase just trolled us.
Yeah, but I think his point is well taken, right?
Yeah, I think his point is very well taken.
What the heck happened?
So if you want to email us and climb on in the tweet bag, you can do that. Rising Shop. What is the email address? I've done this 2 weeks in a row now. RisingShoutPod@gmail.com. RisingShoutPod, one word, @gmail.com. All right, we have our first official tweet bag question now.
Tweet bag.
Did your voice just crack?
Something happened there in the middle. Like, I know that's a compound word. There shouldn't be a gap in the middle. I'm not really sure what happened.
This one is from Twitter, from Dan Roach. That's @BruteDR. He says, on a scale of 1 to Incredible Hulk, how angry should we be about the second half meltdown? I'm at about an Anakin Skywalker from Revenge of the Sith. #tweetbag.
So do you feel like if this is a scale that goes from left to right, 1 being left and then Hulk being on the far right, I feel like Anakin Skywalker, Revenge of the Sith is further to the right than the Incredible Hulk. That's like pure evil.
I hate you.
Isn't that the episode where he goes in with all the little Jedi's.
Yeah, and kills young Jedi.
Yes,
and then
that's
ends
like
up
that's way further to the right than Incredible Hulk.
Choking his wife, his pregnant wife. Yeah. Force choking. Yeah. I mean, it's. I think you're right. I think Incredible Hulk is actually to the left of that. So I think we get where Dane was, not in a happy place. Matt, let's get back to that question. And by the way, if you want to tweet at us, it's at BYU_RiseShout on Twitter. Let's talk about the meltdown, and then we'll talk about how we feel about it, okay?
Yeah.
Christopher Clark on Twitter says this. That's at ChrisClarkUS. He says, true or false, the second half meltdown was mostly about lack of depth. Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag Grimes is better than Detmer. Matt, true or false, the second half meltdown was mostly about a lack of depth.
If I could change the mostly to largely, I don't know if it's mostly about lack of depth, but I think lack of depth was one of the top two issues, and okay. I believe that there were two main problems.
Okay, but let me challenge you on that a little bit, okay? If Hadley plays the second half, do we win? I know it's an unanswerable question, but I'm going to make the answer.
I think we might, but doesn't that illustrate the point that this is about depth?
Yes, but follow me here. Just work with me. If Isaiah Kafusi plays the second half, do we win?
Perhaps.
I am going to agree with Chris that it is mostly about depth. There were mistakes made, no doubt about it, both players and especially coaches, and we're going to get to that. But even with those mistakes, if those two players had been in, and again, that goes to depth, right? Because there wasn't somebody as good or close to come in and do it. And Butch Powell, I don't know if you recognize this, he came in for a few plays. I think injuries and stuff has just worn that guy down, right?
Yeah, he's not who he was. He was never awesome in pass coverage.
No, but there was one where he got
hit like he used to,
juked out. Yeah, took a terrible angle. I just think physically he's not the same. So, and then you had Matthew Criddle, who I don't know how many snaps he had played, but he played almost every meaningful snap in the second half.
I don't know if he had ever. I don't think he'd played hardly all year.
I don't think he had
his,
either.
I mean, and his brother was giving some very frank analysis about his performance during the game on Twitter, but yeah, I don't think he'd played all year.
Yeah,
and so, he was not ready.
He was not ready, and that's not on Criddle, right? I'm not blaming.
I don't think
Criddle
you expect him to be ready, right? He's not there to be ready to play in those meaningful snaps.
No, but they didn't have anybody else, right? So that goes back to the depth. Okay, so Brian Taylor has this to say about the meltdown. That's at Boozer Taylor on Twitter. When will BYU coaches learn that you cannot be conservative when playing a good team when you have the lead? I think this leads to your second, I'm guessing, your second issue, Matt. This is becoming a pattern with this coaching staff. Almost lost to the University of Arizona as well by taking the foot off the gas pedal. Will we ever learn? Matt, was that your second issue of big issues, was the conservative coaching in the second half?
Yeah, so my second issue is definitely the coaching in the second half. I'd characterize it just a little bit differently. I don't know that we made very many adjustments at halftime that were helpful. I think we made a couple of adjustments at halftime that were detrimental. And I don't know that we didn't adjust enough. And we went away from things that were working, and started doing things that weren't working. And I don't know if I want to call it conservative or what it is, but whatever we did at halftime was not right. And we came out in the second half and they had made the right adjustments and they wore us down because we just, you know, players get nicked up, and I understand that, right? It's a long season. But they had some players who were out, we had some players that were out, and they were able to compensate for that into the third and fourth quarter, and we were not.
Yeah, you know, they didn't have anybody out on their defense, though. That was like almost all of their starters. So I on offense, absolutely, they were compensating for possibly their two best offensive players, maybe Covey is the third, right? But they were,
and they made some adjustments to what they were doing at halftime, and they came out and they did something different.
They did something totally different.
And we started giving them space.
Well, we were playing a quarterback who couldn't throw deep, right?
Right.
And we compensate in the first half with this press coverage, right? And he couldn't find anybody open.
And then in the second half, we started giving them those 5 and 10 yard routes.
Which is exactly played into this quarterback's hand because he can't do much else, right? He's a decent runner and a decent short passer. Which, by the way, I still don't understand how that, who's the guy that the recruit that left? How the heck did he not stick around and why wasn't he playing?
Yeah, that was a bad decision on his part.
It's a bad decision on everybody's part.
Yeah. You always stick that. You got to stick that out.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm glad it worked out for us because if that guy doesn't force Whittingham into not recruiting any other quarterbacks, Zach Wilson is playing for the U. Right?
Oh, and that'd be the worst. I mean, yeah. Zach Wilson is the future of this program.
Yeah, he totally is. He totally is.
We have hope for the future, and we'll get to this in a minute. But yeah. It is called Zach Wilson.
So here's the thing. I totally agree with everything you said. Conservative on defense is definite, right? They played conservative. They played prevent type of defense, right? On offense, I don't know that it was conservative or not. They just changed to trying to run down the clock. And I'm not a big fan of running down the clock.
Not in a game like this.
In this circumstance.
You're not going to run the ball in between the tackles on that defensive front.
No, we're just not that good.
And I don't even care which of our running backs we had.
We could have been fully healthy. Yeah, yeah.
We would not have been able to do that for two quarters in the second half against that team. They're just too good for that. But we didn't want to, we wanted to do this, we're Wisconsin, and we're going to shove it down their throat thing.
So
was not the same.
So have you ever played a card game? Okay, a card game where you bid, right?
Yeah,
sure. You ever played one of those games? And have you ever gotten busted in a card game, and the next time, even though you have a decent hand, you don't bid?
Sure.
Because, you got that recency bias. I think what happened to Grimes and the coaching staff is Wilson throws the pick six, and they took the game out of his hands. And it was the absolutely wrong thing to do. They stopped throwing that intermediate pass game. He also threw a couple of other passes that could have been picked off. But I'm telling you, that is what you do. This is what you get with a freshman quarterback. You have to live with those mistakes and just keep pressing on. You can't stop. I mean, look at that pass and catch with Bushman. Right?
Oh my gosh. Bushman was a monster.
I mean, you have to keep doing that. You can't stop because you're up 27-7. You have to keep doing that. It was the most effective thing we had going was that mid to long range passing game, and they stopped throwing the ball that far.
Well, the other thing that everyone's just going to have to get used to is this. You're going to get that with Zach Wilson all 4 years.
Oh, yeah.
That's who he is. He's in love with his arm, and he believes he can make every throw on the field. Max Hall was the same way, right?
Okay.
And he's going to throw the ball into these windows.
Ty
and
Denver,
you will gasp.
Jim McMahon. All of them.
You're going to gasp 3 out of 4 passes. You're going to be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that didn't get intercepted. But he's going to squeeze it in there. Like putting that ball where Bushman goes and gets it with the one arm over the guy's head. The series before, he put a ball in a very similar window to the one that got picked off. Okay. So that's going to happen. Like, you're going to live and die by that. And what you have to, and I'm with you, what you have to do is don't take the ball out of his hands. The kid is a gamer. He's going to be okay. Like, let him compensate for that by creating the big play and getting something out of nothing when the play breaks down.
Well, like, and without,
you're going to come out ahead in the long run if you let him keep playing his game.
Now, a lot of people will look at the rushing stats and say, we had a pretty good rushing game. Zach Wilson had a pretty good rushing game. Hadley had a couple of decent runs. Like, we didn't rush well against Utah, right? Like, there's a narrative out there that, well, we were rushing pretty well, so handing the ball to Riley Burt there was a good idea.
It was a terrible idea.
And we'll get to that here specifically from Justin Sweeney. He says, this is from at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter.
Sweeney.
If Rose was down 2, I think Coach Dave Rose, with 10 seconds left and drew up a last-second three-point attempt for Dalton Dixon, would that be worse than what we saw on Saturday night when Grimes called a run between the tackles for Burt, not his game, and a 3-yard route when we needed 8? #tweetbag. I'm going to defend the 3-yard route. That isn't where he was supposed to throw the football. That was his safety.
Yeah, and he was the safety valve.
Pass protection broke down. Now, I'm going to argue that having
Bushman... Why was Bushman the check down?
Right? He was the check down because they kept him in for pass protection. It was the wrong formation, right? You needed your max protect. If you were going to run a max protect play, you needed somebody else to block, right? But the problem is the 2-minute drill was run so poorly, right? And this partially is on Wilson. Like, you don't throw the ball tail backery for 4 yards. It's useless. It's an irrelevant play. You throw it out of bounds and save the time, right? You don't run the ball for 4 yards. You throw it out of bounds and save the time, right? Yardage isn't important. It's downs and time. That's the only things that matter in a 2-minute drill. And I kind of feel like, why doesn't he know that? Like, where's the coach? Do they run a 2-minute drill? Because so far this year, our 2-minute drills have absolutely stunk. Like, they've been terrible, right? There's clock mismanagement all the time, and it worries me. And that goes to another question we'll get to in a second. But Matt, let's go to his question about Burt, though. I can't defend that one. I can't defend it at all. Like, there's no defense.
See, Burt's not a bad running back, but he's not the guy that runs up the gut on that Utah defense.
Matt, he got
and
replaced.
We didn't have a guy for that play. We didn't have someone to run that play.
Okay, you say he's not a bad running back. I'm going to counter that a little bit. I'm not going to say he's bad. He got replaced by a linebacker halfway through the year. They were so confident in Riley Burt's ability to be a top-flight college running back that they pulled a linebacker over to be a running back. So I'm going to say they don't think he's very good, right? I'm not making a quality judgment. But the coaching staff clearly does not think Riley Burt is very good, right?
But why did they run that play?
Because that's what Grimes does. That's the play. That's the play he loves to run on short yardage plays. And he does it all the time, right? And it's super predictable. And the other part is, I am a big believer that you put the ball in your best player's hands when the game matters the most. And who's the best player on the offense right now?
Zach Wilson.
Zach Wilson. It's easy. Zach Wilson has to either... It's an RPO with Wilson, right? Like, it's easy. A run-pass option. Make the defense defend 3 different things, and then let Wilson make the best decision. And if he makes a bad decision, you live with it, right? You just live with it.
All right, because you put your best player in a position to get you where you need it.
You don't hand the ball to a speed back to go up the middle. To Sweeney's point, Riley Burt, one of the reasons he's not playing is, well, there's 2 things. They say he can't pass protect, which was shown in the 2-minute drill before that. They brought in El Bakri to block, right? And the other thing is, he's not a tough runner, right? He doesn't break tackles.
He's a speed guy.
He's a speed guy. Get him on the edge and see if he can find space, right? You don't have a running back to run, like you said. You don't have the right personnel to run that play. So that's a big deal. So I don't know. I actually think this was worse than Dalton Nixon throwing up the 3, or at least as bad.
I'd say this is worse.
So Don asks, over the past 3 years, we have lost a number of close football games. Is this a lack of an ability to finish a coaching issue? Bad luck? The best we can do? It's definitely not the best we can do. I don't even know what that means. Because most of the analytical work on close games is it comes down to coaching or luck. Like, there are coaches that do poorly in close games. I don't know if we have enough data yet on Satake, but I have an opinion. And luck always plays into it. For example, on Utah's big pass play that set up their game-tying touchdown, there was a massive hold. The guy just absolutely, I think it was, I'm forgetting who he, what off, the offensive lineman who threw down which of our D linemen, but there was a massive hold, like clear, easy one to call that was not called. That's just bad luck, right? Like, that, if that gets called, they're back 20 yards, they don't get that, you know, big, huge gain, the game's probably over, right? If Taki Taki is at full health and strength, which I don't believe he is, the game's over. Because on that 4th down play, he had the guy lined up, and the guy ran through him. On the touchdown play, he had the guy lined up, and the guy ran through him, right? That doesn't happen earlier in the year, right?
Right.
So yes, there's luck involved, but I also, again, I said I had opinion. I think Taki Taki Satake and Grimes don't know what they're doing at the end of games. I don't think they know what to do with their timeouts. I don't think they know what to do with clock management. And I think it was very apparent in the Boise State and Utah games that should have been victories in both cases.
So, and I can buy the argument that it's luck when you're talking about a single play or a single game, right? But it's not luck when it's a pattern of several games, similar situations, over a course of three seasons.
That's maybe, not luck. Maybe.
Nobody's that unlucky.
No,
that
yes, lucky. You can. Yes, you can. I mean, look at the Patriots' run in their first few Super Bowls. They had everything go right for them. I get it. And then they and people said the same thing you're saying. And then, you know, David Tyree catches a freaking ball off his helmet, right? Like, luck is so unpredictable. I think you could be that unlucky. I think there's evidence, though, to back up what you're saying, that it's not all luck, right? But you could be that unlucky. I think you could be. But in this case, like, In the Northern Illinois game, I don't know what to do with the end of that game. But I know what to do with the Boise State and Utah. Better coaching decisions would have led to victories in both of those cases. I don't know if that's true in Northern Illinois or not. But in these two games, you got to win both those games. You've got to win both of them. You were in position to win them. And Utah even more so because you had the lead the whole game, right? Even more so.
Yeah, this game is where we snatched defeat out of the jaws of victory, right? Yeah. I mean, that's what this was.
Yeah, yeah. And you have to win when you're up three scores in the third quarter. You have to. You have to win those games, right? You don't always. Epic comebacks happen, but you have to win those games, right? Good teams win those games. During the course of this game, there were a couple of somewhat punkish plays by the University of Utah. And Daniel Smith on Facebook, you can climb on in the tweet bag via Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout. Daniel Smith says, did the number of jerky and aggressive moves by Utah football players annoy you as much as it did me? Hashtag face bag, hashtag climb on in. And then he also references the Bernard punch that I don't believe was actually a punch. Matt, I actually thought New Mexico State was way more punkish than Utah. I didn't think was above and beyond what it was fairly normal.
So there's a couple things here, right? One is there's a second angle on the Bernard video where Bernard clearly does not punch Zach Wilson. I mean, it's not even close.
And by the way, if he had punched Zach Wilson, I knew it wasn't a punch live because what do you think Wilson's reaction would have been when he popped up?
Right, right. Wilson wears a back plate, but he doesn't have rib pads up in the front. So, like, you would have seen something there. But, and to your point, Wilson's going to get in his face if he does that. Wilson's not, like, a back-down guy.
No.
But I he did kind of jump up on him or whatever, celebrating the tackle or
and
whatever.
And I hate that doing. Stuff,
and that's,
right?
And that's dumb, but it's not. But that happens all the time.
And some of our guys do it.
And I think he slammed his hand down on the ground and was probably yelling something at Wilson, you know, something, you know, along the lines of "You just got tackled," right? Like, who knows what he said to him? But
you just got tackled. Yes, I'm sure that was the phrase.
He didn't punch him. You can go watch the other angle on the video. But I'm with you, right? It was pretty standard. The, like, grabbing ankles, twisting legs, holding on to legs, straddling people after the tackles, which used to be a penalty in college football, and these types of things. I don't know if it was a little bit more than other games. I did catch myself at times feeling a little bit more sensitive to it just because this was the BYU-Utah game. But once I get separated from that game, I don't know that it was any worse than other teams we played this year.
Now, in the Francis Bernard case, right, if he got more fired up to play BYU, whatever, I don't care. You know, like you and I
said.
I'm sure he
has bad feelings about BYU. 100% he does.
Well, but I'm going to say this. That's all on him, dude. Like,
I'm not saying that's okay.
You made the mistakes, right? Like, it's not BYU's fault that you broke the rules, right? That's on you, man, not on BYU. But if he was a little extra motivated, whatever, I don't care. I mean, like we've said before, anybody that transfers or leaves the program, unless they, you know, did something, you know, truly terrible, I wish him the best, right? Not when they play us directly. I don't want them to play well, but otherwise, I wish them the best.
But I did notice in the second half, he wasn't nearly as visible.
No, no. And again, you know, when he played for BYU, he was good, but he was not exceptional, right? I actually thought he was better as a running back, but what do I know? So 6-6, Matt. BYU finishes 6-6. We're done with the meltdown. I don't want to talk about it anymore. Can we be done with it?
Yeah, it is what it is.
All right. So 6-6. Christopher Clark on Twitter, his second entry into the tweetback says, with four close losses, three of which BYU probably should have won, how close is BYU to a 9 win next year? Hashtag tweetback, hashtag maybe BYU is sneaky good. So Matt, does this make you feel better or worse about a potential 8-9 win season next year versus what we knew at the beginning of the year?
Versus what we knew at the beginning of the year, I think I'm kind of the same, right?
I feel
we'd be
way
a 6-16.
Better. Stop it. We got a quarterback, man. I thought we'd be a 6-6 team and still not have a quarterback.
Well, and if you look at, and the schedule is not the same, right? If you look at the schedule, once we get through September, I guess I should watch. I should hold my tongue because we still got Boise State and Utah State. You know,
yeah, but, Utah State's not going to be as good. Matt Wells is going to be coaching someplace else next year.
So there's, you get to 6 games. I think there's 6 games in here that you win. And then, so do you think you beat Boise State? No, you think you beat Utah State is what you're saying. Yeah, he's going to get hired away.
I think Utah State will not be as good next year. And I may be wrong on that.
There's 7. I don't know, 8-9 wins. I think we need an upset. If you go back and you re-rank, I think Jerem Jordan is where I saw this on Twitter today. You look at the way that the teams are ranked now at the end of the season, and you put them that way. We didn't lose any games to anybody we should have beat, and we had an upset win. Right? So if I say there's 6 games in here on the 2019 schedule that we should win, and even if I add Utah State and make that 7, and then we upset 1 of those other games, that gets us to 8. So, yeah, do I think we're in the range of 7-8 wins next year based on what I've seen based on what I've seen now? Sure.
Yeah, I feel better about it. I think the way you and Jerem are thinking about it is a little flawed because of this. We'll be a better team. Right? That's based on our ranking staying the same. But I don't think our ranking will stay the same. We went from a barely top 100 team to a top 70 team. That's a big jump. I know people aren't satisfied with it, and these gut punch losses like to Utah and Boise State leave us with all sorts of like terrible emotions. But if you look at it analytically, BYU is going to, like, people like Bill Connolly are going to love BYU next year. You're returning everybody who matters, right? You showed improvement from game throughout the year, right? Some of it was uneven. But if you look at these last few games, it's the best offense we've produced in years, right? And the defense has looked better. And I mean, look at how good they were in that first half with everybody on the field. I mean, that was an amazing defensive performance. I am very optimistic about next year, the chances for us to get to 8 or 9 wins. Very optimistic. So let's see. Overall coaching staff stuff. This is from JP on Twitter, JP Feinauer. It seems like Kalani and company believe that recruiting is the key to success at BYU. Broncos seem to think that scheme, preparation, execution were because of the recruiting limitations, honor code, academic, etc. Do you think Bronco was right? Matt, whose philosophy would you buy, or do you have a problem with the way he's classified their philosophies?
Yeah, I don't know that I love the way that we're thinking about it, right? So I think that Kalani and crew believe that recruiting the right players to BYU is the approach they're after. Bronco was more like, tell me you want to come here. I'm going to take the players that want to come here without putting a lot of effort into it. and then I'm going to teach them to execute at a high level, right? I think that they're actually pretty similar approaches. They're both about taking players and getting them to overperform. And in one instance, you do that strictly by teaching them execution. The other one is you find guys that you think are maybe borderline, you know, maybe don't have maybe should be higher star ranked or whatever than they really are. But I don't know if I'd say one approach is necessarily right or wrong. I think you just have to be consistent with the way that you do it. I think that we did very well earlier in BYU football history with approach number one, where they went and found guys that were a good fit for BYU, were probably a little bit underrated, and then got them to outperform their what their perceived potential was.
Right. Harder to do that now with all the recruiting services, by the way. Harder to find people that slip through, right? But yeah, for sure. I don't think their philosophies about recruiting are very different, to be honest. I don't see a big difference in, you know, emphasis on recruiting. I mean, I think Bronco's staff got a kind of a bad rap on the recruiting part, maybe because Bronco wasn't himself the best recruiter. But if you look at the recruiting classes and some of the players they got, right now, Kalani has yet to put together a class that's better than the best Bronco classes, right? So, I don't know. I don't know. The execution piece, I mean, Bronco is one of those guys that I don't think, you know, he's not the warm, fuzzy guy, right? And when he controlled the defense, it was tough. Those practices were hard, right? Brian Logan talked about earlier this year on, I think it was on BYU Sports Nation, about when Bronco took when they fired Jaime Hill and he took over, and all of a sudden the practices got really hard, right? He believed in pushing you so that the execution would be there. So I don't know. I think in the end, multiple philosophies can be successful at BYU. I don't think there's one magic philosophy that is the only way to successfully coach a BYU football team.
Yeah, but at their root, I still think that the philosophies are similar. It is, you find guys that are a good fit for the first BYU, and you get them to overperform.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we had a first-time tweet bagger, Wade Hillam. Welcome to the tweet bag, Wade.
Welcome, Wade.
He gave us a long email that I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'm going to sum it up, Matt. So he talked about he briefly played a scout quarterback at the University of Utah some time ago, and talked a lot about in his email about what BYU is trying to do defensively, that they're trying to kind of recreate what Utah has accomplished, meaning fierce front four, very active linebackers, and super athletic defensive backs. And he points out that he thinks we saw some of that in the last half of the year, and I would say absolutely. I thought in the last half of the year we did see that, and the defensive backs against Utah played really, really well, especially in the first half when they were unleashed. He then says he thinks BYU is close to being very good. Wilson has got it going, and he gets a ton of talent back, right? Cauley is the only one of his top targets who departs, if I'm getting that right. And this was the team that that Wade and all of us should have expected. About a 6-6, some ups and downs, and some highs like Wisconsin, and some lows like blowing a 3-score lead against Utah. Matt, I read Wade's email, and a lot of my thoughts were, and I've been thinking about this a lot since Saturday night, we're letting our emotions get carried away here. This team is a better team. We have improvements, and we have a quarterback that can make big-time throws. Why are we all, like, super depressed about this team, right? I get Saturday night's depressing. I'm not trying to tell people that they should have been like, it's all right. But I think we're a little too down on the staff, even with some of these criticisms even we've had today. I think things are going in the right direction. I feel way better about the program now than I did 12 months ago.
I feel better about the program now than I did 4 months ago. I think what has hurt the fan the most is the way that some of these games were lost, right? Is the being up 20 to nothing and then getting outscored 35-7 in the second half. That becomes an emotional, you create emotional reactions that way, right?
Or being inside the 5 yard line with a chance to win, on the Smurf turf, right? That one.
Yeah. And not getting it done.
Not even getting a play, right?
Right. But if you look at the team a year ago and the team today, it's a drastically different product on the field. And, you know, and this is something we didn't get into when we were talking about the Utah game there. Where was Gunnar Romney? Like,
he must have been hurt.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway,
it's the problem when they don't talk about injuries at all.
But he's back. I mean,
Bushman and Hulker.
Yeah, so there's a lot of reason to be optimistic about next year. You know, there's two or three really, really tall order games on the schedule next year. But if you look at the way, and come back to your point a second ago, you look at the way this team is progressing, like they should be pretty competitive in a lot of these contests next year. And if Zach Wilson is who we believe that he is, I think the offense is going to do a good job. I don't know, and I don't want to pile on anybody right now, but with a different quarterback in there Saturday night, that game's not even close.
Oh, and we really had no business being close. Utah's a better team than us this year by a wide margin.
We should have lost that game. We should have lost that game by 3 scores.
Yeah. So you know, it's to me, it's a terrible way to lose a game. You're up by 3 scores. You should win, right? You should always be able to hold serve at that point. But in the end,
I think Satake. What is he like? It's his only loss being up at halftime.
It's not good.
I don't think that's true, actually.
I don't think
there's
that's
some
true
stat either. That somebody threw out, but anyway.
It's certainly the worst loss of his career from that standpoint, right? From being ahead by that many points. But, you know, I like where the team is headed. So Dave Broderick on Facebook has this. Do you think the way BYU has lost will accelerate coaching staff changes? Being blown out by Utah State, Washington, wetting the bed against Utah, or will Homo be analytical and see the improvements and press forward with the current staff? I think the only way that the top folks on the staff are changing is if any of them decide to leave. Matt, do you agree or disagree with that statement?
I think there's a chance we get a new defensive coordinator.
Zero chance. You gotta be kidding me. Why? Why are they? Why? Why are they gonna change defensive coordinators?
With bad schemes.
Dude, they just put up these last four games are as good of a run as BYU've had since Bronco left. They're not going to change it.
You gave up 35 points in the second half.
Gave up 35 points in the second half, and how many starters did they have of the 11? I'm just saying, no way. There's no way that Tuiaki gets fired because of this. I can't. They're going to be, according to Football Outsiders, like a top 40 defense this year. And improved over last year. I don't believe it. You may be right, but I would be shocked if Tuiaki gets fired. Now, I won't be shocked if people leave, because people leave all the time for various reasons, right? Different job, personal things. Right, and I can't predict.
Fessy Satake could get picked up somewhere for a more prestigious sure. position or something. Some of that stuff happens.
And Grimes, you know, his family hates living in Provo this time, right? And they decide to take a different job or whatever. But I don't think Grimes is going to get hired away because I don't think the offense was good enough, right? The big fear we had was if the offense is too good, he leaves, right, for a bigger job. But I think we'll have Grimes 2.0. Satake's not going anywhere. For the people like after the game were like, fire them all. They're not going anywhere, guys.
No. This was an improved product. Like we all said in August, right? Listen, we go from 4 wins. Let's just get bowl eligible and keep onward and upward. That's what we got.
That's what you got. So, but again, I could be wrong. You might be right on the Tuiaki piece. I don't believe so. I think Tuiaki. I agreed with Wade. I think Tuiaki may be onto something, and he just didn't have the right personnel to play the defense he wants to play, but he's getting there. So, you know, and I look at the way that he made some changes in the second half of the year, that, you know, moving Corbin and Satake all over the field to make up for some shortcomings. And hats off to some of those decisions.
Well, and I'm just to be clear, I'm not advocating that Tuiaki should be fired. Have I had moments in my life over the past couple months where I was like, man, this guy needs to go?
Yes.
Perhaps.
Yes, yeah.
But that's not the position I'm taking right now. But the question was, do we think anybody in here could change? And I think if there is somebody that they let go, that might be the guy.
Yeah, 35 points and a half is bad.
And I know Utah State isn't a slouch team. I understand that they're a top 25 team, but yikes.
Yeah.
I mean, you gave up 45
but again,
points.
At you're home. Judging points, and I don't think Homo judges on points, dude. I think.
Oh, I just figured that's how you win games.
I think they're no. Stop it. The team gets judged on points. You can't judge the defense purely on points. I hate that. That's a terrible way to judge defense. Because in Utah State, it wasn't all the defense's fault. The offense couldn't move the freaking football, right? So you put your defense in short fields all the time. They're going to give up. Even a good defense is going to give up more points if it has a shorter field, right? I mean,
that's true, which was the case there, right? I mean, they only had, what, like 165 pass yards in that game?
I mean, the offense was not good. And the other thing was, on Saturday, we got killed by frickin' terrible punting. Like, just terrible, right? I mean, I know that, what's-his-face, Wozniacki, whatever, their awesome punter, he had one shank, but the rest of his were like 50-yarders, right? Like, we had just a bunch of shanks, right? Just terrible punts. And that hurts too, right? So it's not all on the defense, but you're right. 35 points in the second half and kind of some defensive meltdown in the second half.
Well, and I'll even take away the pick six touchdown, right?
Yeah, you got to take away the pick six because obviously they didn't have anything to do with that. All right, Matt, so let's, before we get to basketball, because we're getting close to being out of time, maybe we already are out of time, but we're going to keep talking. So the college football playoff, Matt, it's Alabama, it's Clemson, it's Notre Dame. Who's the fourth team?
See, the thing that's unfair about it is that it won't be Georgia.
It won't be Georgia. No.
Nope.
They're not going to get in with two losses.
No, it's going to be Oklahoma.
If Oklahoma wins, you think it's Oklahoma.
Yep.
It's not Ohio State.
Nope.
It's not UCF, undefeated.
Nope.
And that's about it, right? Washington State, this was, if Washington State had beat Washington, I think they had a really good shot at it, right? Like, they needed Oklahoma to lose, probably, but mm-hmm. they might
but
get
they would have been
over Ohio State.
They would be the benefactor of Oklahoma's loss. I think now Oklahoma loses to Texas. Now you're talking about UCF.
I think it's Ohio State at that point. But I hope they at least talk about UCF in that scenario. But of course, UCF lost their best player on this last weekend, so we'll see how they bounce back from that. Matt, here are some teams that I think if they got into the playoff could make some noise. You tell me, yes, maybe, or you're crazy. All right.
So this is a team that if they're in the 2-versus-3 matchup might make it to the Alabama game?
Correct.
Okay. So correct. That's just kind of how I'm going to think about this.
Yeah. Let's start with Notre Dame.
Yes.
Okay. Ohio State.
Nope.
Michigan. Even though there's no scenario, I think, where they actually get in. But if they did. Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah.
Central Florida.
No.
Okay, and here are some crazy names that won't make it, but I think are at least analytically very, very good teams. Georgia.
Oh, yeah. Georgia could, on a given day, beat Alabama.
Beat anybody, really, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously. What about a Penn State on any given day?
I don't know.
What about Boise?
Boise would be interesting, but I wouldn't be as excited about them. There's one on that I would put on this list that I'm surprised you haven't said yet.
Oh, who haven't I said?
Washington.
Oh, yes. Sorry, I skipped them. Yes, Washington. What do you think about them?
Washington could be interesting.
I think they're maybe. And if Central Florida were entirely healthy, I think they, on any given day, could beat anybody. I don't think it's likely that they beat Clemson or Alabama, but I think they could possibly do that. Again, if everybody was healthy. Matt, can Notre Dame win this thing?
Yeah.
I don't think they can win this thing. I don't think they can beat Clemson or Alabama.
I think Clemson's, they can beat Clemson. So Alabama's good. A bigger question mark for me.
Clemson's still pretty darn good, man. Like, I think we're all, like, in love with Alabama, and rightfully so. I think Clemson's not as far behind them as we think they are. And I think those two teams are, like, 1A and 1B. I think everybody else is quite a bit below them. Sweeney and Dabo and Saban have something going, man. It might be another 5 or 6 years where the two of them are duking it out every year, which for some people is going to be boring. For me, it's actually kind of cool to see that level of greatness.
Yeah, they are pretty good.
They are pretty good. So, Matt, we'll talk about basketball here briefly, and we'll start talking about them more as time goes on. They drop a game that you and I talked about in the in our kind of preseason show, that this was one of the games they actually really needed to get for their resume. It's not a deal killer by any stretch of the imagination, but you're talking about a potential, we'll see where they are at the end of the year, top 40 team. Houston will be a team that's likely in the tournament, and you have them at home, right? And they lose. So Matt, has that loss right now, basically BYU has beat four really terrible teams, Utah Valley team that's okay, and then they've lost to the only two good teams that they've played. Did that loss on Saturday change how you feel about the men's basketball team?
No, it's early and Houston's a good team.
Okay.
You know, I didn't get real despondent after the Nevada loss. I'm not ready to lose my mind over this one either. I mean, it's disappointing, but you know, they didn't look great.
No.
But it's early, and that I think that Houston team might be a little bit better than we realize.
Yeah. I think I agree with everything you said. I have one big concern right now, though, is right now we're shooting a little less than 29% from 3-point range, which is good for 310th in the country. The only person right now that I feel comfortable taking a 3-point shot is Haas, with maybe Celius being, maybe a second. I don't feel comfortable any time anyone else throws up a three. Right? And I don't like that Childs is taking 2.5 threes a game. I would like to see that closer to zero. Right.
Yeah.
I zero. That's too drastic. He's a decent outside shooter. I think it's fine if he occasionally puts one up when he's open, right? Or when the clock's going down, right? And it's the best shot in a bad scenario. I worry that we won't be able to beat good teams, even within conference play, because there's a couple of teams that beyond Gonzaga and St. Mary's that are playing pretty well, including San Francisco. I worry about beating tough teams on the road at this point if we can't hit more three-pointers, if Haas is the only one that can make threes.
Yeah, if that consistently becomes a problem, yeah, we're going to have some real issues.
But I'll tell you what, I'm encouraged by the fact that Childs and Haas are both playing at a very high level right now. Haas is playing the best basketball he's played since he came to BYU. So that gives me hope that as the other people, you said it's early, as the other guys on the roster find their roles and find their where they're at, and Emery comes back, You've got two guys at the top that are capable of winning some ball games, both of them. So that's optimistic. Any other thoughts on the basketball team?
Well, I think for me, the game I'm really watching out for at this point to kind of see, you know, that where we can kind of now I feel like we'll have some real data is after the Mississippi State game. That's another really solid team. It'll be on the road. You know, and we'll have, you know, a whole lot more basketball under our belts at that point. And I think at that point, if you string together something where you see some patterns with the 3-point shooting or other things that also kept us out of contention with Nevada and Houston and other teams, then you'll have a reason to be concerned. But if that game is, you know, and I'm not saying we have to win that game to feel like we're going to be any good this year. But if we feel like we've answered some of those problems against that type of an opponent, that's at that point in the season, that'll really tell us something. So that's a game that I'm looking forward to at this point.
Yeah, I'm also looking at those Utah State and Utah games. They're both top 100 teams, and I think those are wins you for your tournament resume. I think those are wins you need. So, and they're not givens, right? Because you know, they're probably similar teams in quality to us, right?
Yep.
At this point, so they're not givens. One's at home. One's technically a road game, I guess. Right? They play in the Vivint Center against Utah. It's technically a neutral game or whatever. But those are two games too. And I agree with you on the Mississippi State. I think that's a great barometer going into conference play. If you can hang with them, and heck, if you could pull off an upset in that game, you're going to feel way different about this team, right? Not just their tournament chances, but also how they can fare in WCC play. And we'll get into this when we preview the conference schedule. But there's a couple teams, San Francisco, San Diego, that are playing pretty well right now. And beyond, of course, St. Mary's has struggled a little bit, and Gonzaga arguably could be the best team in the country. The conference has gotten a little bit better, which is good for us, right? Because that means wins in conference can mean more. But it also means you got to go out and beat these teams if they're legitimate top 100 teams by the time we play them, right? So anyway, Matt, anything else for
That's
you
it.
This week?
I'm out.
You're out. You're done. You're spent. You're spent. Matt, here's hoping we play in an interesting bowl game.
There you go.
Looking forward to that.
I think there's three teams that are going to get left out.
Of bowl games?
Yep.
It won't be us.
No, luckily we're partnered up with somebody who owns like a dozen bowl games.
Well, not only that, we draw, right? So the bowl games, from a TV standpoint, you're mentioning ESPN. That's a huge plus. And then, of course, from a ticket standpoint, if they put us anywhere, we can draw, right? It's like at that UMass game, all the UMass fans were amazed that all of us had come out from Utah, right? Right. So, you know, we'll end up somewhere. Now, it may be a crappy matchup against a crappy team, right, in a crappy bowl. But the Frisco Bowl or whatever, but you could go to that one.
So I'll take a matchup against a crappy team and get a seventh win.
Yeah, right. All right, well, thanks everybody for downloading this thing. We appreciate your tweet bag questions. I would recommend, if you haven't done so already, to subscribe to the show on iTunes. And heck, go out to iTunes and give us a 5-star review because you love the show so much. But other than that, we'll be back next week for our 8th anniversary show. Matt, talk some more hoops. Talk the first round of women's volleyball and a few other things. 8th anniversary.
And I'll probably play the clip from So I Married an Ex-Murderer where they sing the happy anniversary song.
Happy anniversary. All right. Well, you did last year. Was that 2 years ago?
Okay. I don't remember. It was a year or 2 years ago. I probably did a little. I was probably a little over the top. So you should expect more of the same.
Yeah. I would assume so. Well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.
Happy anniversary. Happy, 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 happy. Shut it!